Today is Sunday, October 18th, 2020. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Richard Hanson, H-A-N-S-O-N. This is a part four interview. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Richard. How are you today?
Good morning. Doing fine. Thanks.
Good. Richard, first things first here. May we have your permission to record this interview over the phone?
Yes.
Thank you. We were talking last time about your getting a job for the United States Forest Service, National Forest Service, in the McCall District of the Payette National Forest. Around 1977 or so, could you pick that thread up?
Yeah. I had been living at the McMeekin Ranch in Idaho on the Salmon River, picking up skills and basically practicing a craft that I never thought I'd be doing, and that was packing mules. And I happened to, it was a time I was going to have to move back into town and look for work. And happened to see a job posting for a seasonal animal packer. And I applied. I thought I had a good shot. I had veterans preference that I really didn't know I had. I had would get the 5 points. But I applied for the job and got it. It was going to be like a lot of things in central Idaho, a 4 month, 5 month job. And to start off, it was, it was attached to everything in the Forest Service in Idaho is basically also attached to fire. My direct supervisor was the FMO.
What's a FMO?
Fire Management Officer.
Thank you.
And fire was always a collateral duty for anybody in the Forest Service there.
Richard?
And that customer was basically packing. Go ahead.
Hey, Richard, for the Park Service, to be in the fire, kind of around fire, you have to do what's called a pack test.
Yeah.
To be able to carry, a 40-pound pack, and you've got to be able to cover a mile in 4 minutes or something like that? No, that's not.
When I first started out in fire, it was a step test. And what they had you do was put on a pack. I think it was, 30 pounds, 35. And then they had a stepping deal. You step up, step down. And that's what it's called, a step test.
Okay.
They would check your heart rate, and at the beginning, check your heart rate. In the middle, check your heart rate. At the end, and I think the test lasted 10 minutes, and then there was the parameters there. Later on, we had the pack test, and my remembrance of the pack test was more like 3 miles in 40 minutes, something like that.
That sounds right, yeah.
So they did the same thing, check your heart, check your vitals, do all of that. If you fell in within a certain parameter, you were good to go.
Okay.
You could be a firefighter.
So when you got the job, was that something you had to do, was then do the step test?
Yeah, Yeah, okay. I had to do the step test, and I had six head. I had had one Appaloosa horse that was just an unbelievable trail animal. I'm sez it came from the Nez Perce tribe, you know, up Lewiston.
Wow.
And then I had five mules, which was basically the perfect number to have on your hip. Any more than five, the string got too long. And some of them hadn't been worked in a while, and I learned so much more there those first few years with the Park Service, or with the Forest Service, as far as working with mules, and a lot of rugged trail rides. Some of them cross country. One of my jobs was to, like, when smoke jumpers jumped a fire. There wasn't always a trail nearby, but they always had to get their stuff out.
Okay.
And it was packing out the saws and the packs and the other things of smoke jumpers and packing fire lookouts. I think on my district, I think there was six lookouts. And that would be, those were tough days.
Why?
Because they're remote.
Okay.
And you're packing in stuff for basically somebody's food, and sometimes a lot of water and tools and all that, and they're going to be up there for 3 months.
Okay.
So they're always big loads. They're always very awkward.
Mm.
And some places real hard to get to.
Okay.
So, but, you know, I learned so much there.
So this is a 4 to 5 month job. Was it a summer job, or the fall, or the winter, or the spring? How did that work time-wise?
Initially, it was, Idaho gets a lot of snow.
Okay.
And so initially, that first year, I think I got hired sometime in May, and was usually laid off. You know, the government fiscal year starts October 1st.
Okay.
So that was always a time, basically, that if they had extra money, or if they had a little something, but normally they'd tell you you'd be laid off on the 1st of October.
Okay.
Just coinciding with the fiscal year of the government. I guess it's still October. Well, I know it is still October, the start of the fiscal year.
And how much were you making an hour? Do you remember?
Oh, God. $6 or $7.
Okay.
I think I got hired to start as a WG4 or something like that. Yeah, so not much. $6 or $7 an hour.
And was that for an 8-hour day, regardless of whether you worked 12 or 14?
Yep, pretty much.
Okay.
You could keep track on it. And yeah, you hardly, you know, you don't work 8 hours when you're packing. It's not like at the end of 8 hours, you drop all your loads wherever you're at.
Right.
You know, so, but it was, you know, I basically hadn't worked since I got out of the military, which was in 69, late 69. So it was nice getting the paycheck, whatever it was. You know, I mean, I'd done the odd jobs that we talked about before, but
yep.
And then the second year.
So before we get to the second year, you've got a horse and five mules. I shouldn't say you'd never run a string that long, because you may have in Colorado.
I had run them about that long in Colorado, but it was so much easier country.
Oh, okay.
It was more open. It was not a... Basically, in Colorado, our trips could be 2 to 3 miles at the drop zone to a mine shaft, and then after that, depending on the nearest road, they could be up to 5 or 6 miles.
So short distances.
Yeah, short distances.
You'd cover that much in a day on a multi-day pack, then. In the payout.
I would cover sometimes 23, 24 miles in a day.
Wow.
You know, a lot of them were like, okay, 10 miles in and 10 miles out. I mean, you know, you just
didn't,
a lot of that was like day trips.
And you'd go in and you'd drop off your load or pick up a load and then move out.
Right.
So it was a long moving day.
Right.
Wow. And you'd have to take care of your animals. Did you learn how to shoe them or did someone else do that?
No, I did learn how to shoe. It was something I was never really good at. I mean, I always I could put on a good shoe. I could put on emergency shoes.
Okay.
But I could only shoe like 2 to 3 in a day. I had the wrong body type, you know. I mean, a good horseshoer, good mule shoer is, you know, can do 10 or 12 in a day, and they're short and stocky.
Yep.
And that makes for, that's a good body style for a shoer. But I knew how to do it, and, you know, I would bet, basically, you know, I guess the one thing they tell you, and it's very true, is you fit the shoe to the animal. You don't fit the animal's foot to the shoe.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, if you remembered that, but I got tired of, when I got to the Grand Canyon, we had a shoer.
Okay.
But no, to start, I was the guy.
All right, that first year, 4 to 5 months, did you ever have any wrecks that year? Anything come to mind that you remember that first year?
Oh, I mean, definitely some wrecks. I think where I had problems the most was, like, overnight, you know, they had to eat. I had a bell mare. You put old cowbell around a mare that all the mules looked up to, and then you hobble her, and then you would, you know, listen to that bell in the morning, and then go have to round them all up.
Mm.
But sometimes they were pretty far away. I got that down too. I got that part down.
Cool.
And I remember what the fuck was the? I don't remember the name of the lookout, but I know a lady. They told me, you know, be at this trailhead. And we're packing in. I think it might have been Jenkins Crossing or something like that. And this big lady gets out, all her stuff, and she's got a ton of stuff, and she's got a little dog, you know, a little yappy dog. And I've got another saddle animal for her, and we get everything loaded up, and there was a ton of stuff. And I don't know, hit the trail probably around 11 after she got there, and we got everything loaded up and stuff. And the last half mile to the lookout was probably 2.5, 3 feet of snow. or better. Then we plowed through that, got up to the lookout. Most of those lookouts, you know, there's just a huge stairway to get to the top, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so dropped everything at the bottom of the stairs, and I helped her carry the stuff up. We put it on the landing there, and I said, okay, give me the key. Let's get this stuff in there. She goes, well, I don't have a key.
Oops.
What do you mean you don't have a key? Well, I thought you had the key. I said, no, I don't have a key. It's not my lookout. And so I'm going, Jesus Christ. By that time, you know, I was going to be close even just getting back down before dark.
Yeah.
And so I called my boss, George Griffin. I said, George, we got a little problem. There's no key up here. Unless there's one stashed up here. He goes, no, there's no key up there. I said, well, what do you want me to do? He says, well, see if you can put a small hole in one of the windows. And get to... I said, okay. I said, I've never heard of a small hole in a window. So I just took a Pulaski, man, and just smashed the friggin', and those are floor-to-ceiling glass, you know.
Ooh.
And got the stuff in and headed out. And somebody else went up later on, attacked somebody else up there to fix the window. But, so yeah, I mean, it was just always something. And, I mean, always a good something, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was always something where you had to, pretty much stay focused. You had to be focused all the time on the animals.
Nice.
You had to be constantly looking around. You had to totally be aware of your surroundings. And I did a good job that first year. And the next year they added a three-person trail crew to the job. So it was animal packer trail foreman title. So I got a little bump. I think I was a WG6 or something like that. And had a little house in town with Heather and my first wife. And things were pretty good. And second year, I think I got brought back in April, I believe. And we were going to go down to the South Fork of the Salmon, which is low country. And so just had another, you know, pretty spectacular season. Riding mules in the Fayette National Forest. And this is before, I don't know what year the Wilderness Act came out.
64.
Okay, I don't know what year the Fayette was declared wilderness.
Ah, good question.
Frank Church, but I know we were still using power tools, and they would send us out to different places to, because they knew it was coming. Wilderness, and so it was another really good year. I was getting to know the animals real well. Had the same animals as I had before.
Nice.
And I still had my animals, my personal animals, and so a lot of times I would rotate one or two of them in.
Oh, cool.
And
nice, because that would give the Forest Service animals a break. It would keep right. You familiar with your animals.
Yep, that's exactly right. And it worked well. And, you know, when I had my animals with me, I didn't have to pay to feed them, or I didn't have to pasture them out somewhere.
Oh, cool. Richard,
but,
you mentioned that your second year, you were packing for a trail team of three people. I would think that'd be real different, because now you're assigned with a group, you're working on a trail. You wouldn't have these long rides, you know, like the tower resupplies or the long rough rides out into country with no trails, going to a helicopter drop for the hot shots.
Well, I still had those.
Oh, okay.
Not as many, but no, that was still part of my gig. And, you know, my job with the trail guys was to pretty much the same, get camp in, line them out with what we were going to be doing, and then maybe split for a couple of days to pack a lookout or whatever. And during fire season, the trail crew guys were also firefighters, so there's a lot of times they would be put on a fire, and I would be going back to being solo.
Okay.
But yeah, it was my first, and I had done some trail work on the trail where I was living, the McMeekin Ranch, because it was a 3.5-mile trail.
Oh, okay.
To get up to where I was living. And it was a rough trail. So, you know, I'd moved rocks. I'd definitely built a few walls. I'd fixed bridges and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But, yeah, this was a different, it was good for me.
Cool.
You know, it really was. We were building a lot of plunging bridge. We were doing just a lot of different stuff.
What kind of bridge is that you mentioned?
Punching bridge. I don't know how to spell it. PUNECHO. It's small bridges over boggy areas or real bad muddy areas. And you just use native materials, and most of the time we'd build them out of lodge pole.
Okay.
And just some of them could be 100 feet, and so learning a lot of chainsaw skills, some rock skills, lots of rigging, doing lots of different types of rigging, you know, pulling large objects, you know, with block and tackle, just, yeah, lots of learning going on.
Cool.
And I finished off that second year, so that would be, what, 78 or?
Yeah.
Something like that, because I went to Grand Canyon in 1980, if I can believe my arrowhead.
Okay.
So I think that was 78, and then I had one of the great, there was another packer, he was, his name was Clem Pope, and they wanted to keep us around, so the Forest Service flew two permanent jobs, subject to furlough, because we weren't going to be working year-round, but, you know, then we didn't have to worry about our friggin' job every summer.
Yeah.
And so, Clem and I both got the packer jobs. His was up in the place called the Chamberlain Basin. A beautiful, beautiful country. If you ever look at a map of the salmon, his unit was up above a place called Mackey Bar.
That's pretty country.
Maine and the South Fork basically come together right in there.
Hmm.
And then he was up top in the basin. But I think it was October that they called me up and said, we're going to take you into Chamberlain Basin, and you're going to help Clem bring the animals out. and we were going to winter them at a place called Patty Flat. And that was probably trail-wise, it was probably about 45, 48 miles. God, I had some fun on that trip. And I was able to do it a few other times with him.
Was that the trail that runs along the Salmon, that runs along the river?
Runs along the South Fork of the Salmon.
Okay.
And then you go up over a place called Lick Creek Summit. And then from Lick Creek, you drop down towards McCall. And Patty Flat was about 12 miles from McCall. But he had close to 20 head up there, and it was just me and him.
Wow.
And it was just so much fun. And it took us a couple of days. And then in the springtime, I would help him run him back in there, too. And it was just I had done something similar with, I think I told you about Cork Conley at the Shep Ranch.
Yeah.
I helped the Shep Ranch in the springtime run their mules. And they would come right through McMeekin, McMeekin Ranch where I'm at. So
okay.
I'd meet them at the McMeekin all saddled up. And then we would take 25, 30 fucking mules. Trail them in, one in the front, one guy in the front. And the thing about a mule, they know where they're going. So, you know, if they've done it once, they'll remember, okay, this is going to be where we're going, you know, this is where we're headed.
So this wouldn't be a string. You wouldn't have them.
No.
They were just
loose herding them.
Wow, great.
And I always kept one or two on my hip just so I could switch out if it was going to be a huge long day. You know, I could go 10 miles with one and then 10 miles with another, and then so I could switch them out. But that time in the Payette was a huge learning experience, both in the profession that I came to, you know, work 35 years in, and also as far as mental growth, spiritual growth.
Cool.
I think it was the first time I developed confidence in anything. Because I'd been beat down so bad when I was a kid that I was starting to go, fuck, man, I'm pretty good at this.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at this. And then some, so life went on. I had stopped in 77, 78. I think I wintered. Well, I know I wintered in Idaho. Learned how to ski. There was a beautiful ski hill right outside of McCall, Brundage Mountain. And it was good. It was good.
Hey, Richard, what do you remember about Clem Pope?
Clem?
Yeah.
He was a local boy. He was good. I mean, he was excellent with the animals. He'd been working a few more seasons than I had been. I think he might have started in the mid-70s. Real nice guy. Good packer,
okay.
Good shooter. We never actually socialized, you know, when we were on the trail. But, no, I liked Clem.
Nice. You mentioned him. I thought I should ask you about him because I have a chance to.
Yeah. No, he's good. He's a good man.
Cool.
And
so this is the first winter that you didn't go south down to to warmer climbs.
Yeah. So 77 and 78, I basically stayed in McCall and would I still had the lease on the place at the McMeekin. I would go up there a lot in the winter. My daughter, my ex, would mostly stay in town. But yeah, no, man, it was things were good.
Cool. And so with that job as a permanent subject to furlough, would you end up working, say, 6 to 7 months a year or eight? How did that?
Yeah, exactly. I would start earlier than most of the seasonals, and it was not uncommon to work until snowfall.
Okay.
Some of those trips out of Chamberlain Basin would be mid-October, and then I would I never really worked up until Thanksgiving or any of that kind of stuff, but I think I was working 6-7 months. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe 8.
Cool. And that sounds like, you know, a decent wage, a livable wage back then.
Yeah. I don't know what I was making when I got permanent, but I think it was like a WG-6, so that might have been, I don't know, shit, 10, 12 bucks an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would also get per diem. And I think that was like 12 bucks a day. And I was away from home more than I was at home. So, you know, that added up to those per diem checks.
Yeah. Cool. And the skills, like you say, I mean, so this is more on-the-job training. Did you get a chance to mentor under anyone for trails? Or was everybody just kind of in it together? Was there anybody you got a chance to spend some time with? It was really good that you learned some stuff from.
Yeah, one of the seasonal guys that I hired was the name of Richie Perez, and the other guy on my crew was a longtime old friend from the Bay Area and also a NOM vet. Everybody called him Che because he looked just like Che. Talk just like Che. And so those were my crew members to start that first year. And Richie was a spectacular carpenter.
Wow.
He was good with a saw, and when we were laying out these bridges and stuff, you know, and I didn't know how to make a turn without big gaps, you know, and that kind of stuff. And he showed me how to just lay the log out and put it where you want it, how to rip the log so that you could make these turns. He was really...
What do you mean by a turn?
Well, like if you're turning, you know, there's no straight lines in nature, man.
Right.
It would go through a place, and then you'd have to turn a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, or
like with a bridge,
yeah.
You mean? Oh,
right.
Okay.
Then there was so he basically taught me how to do that kind of stuff, and
cool.
And really made me more proficient with a chainsaw and such. And actually, my house, the house that I'm sitting in right now, is built with skills that I learned in the Forest Service and the Park Service.
Nice.
So, yeah. And I ended up, I think the next year got to be a little hectic. And I don't know if I want, let's tell you, it was when my father died. And I think that had been 78, maybe 79, probably one of those 2 years. And, I wasn't there, and I got there. I did try to make the move. My mother had called me and asked me to come back. So I got down to Boise, got on a plane, and by the time I got to San Francisco, he had passed while I was on the airplane.
Mm.
But I ended up staying there, helping my mother out for, I gotta say, a couple of months.
Okay.
And I'm not gonna talk about what happened in McCall while I was gone. But suffice to say that that must have been friggin' 79. That when I got back up there, that it was time for another yellow brick road.
Okay.
And
did your animals make it through okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I had some good friends there that had large properties in McCall, or the Long Valley, actually. And I was good enough to, they would let me turn them loose.
Nice.
And I could do my thing. So again, I'm trying to figure out months. I guess I could go look at the family Bible if I still had it.
No, roughly is enough for this.
But so I got back up to McCall, found some things out, and just knew it was friggin' time to leave. My brother was, so this is fall, my brother had moved up to Seattle, so I took off from there, went up to Seattle, and then went to see some friends in Vancouver, and I met this lady in Vancouver. And I'd go back and forth. I was working a little construction up in Vancouver, and every payday, man, I'd get busted by immigration, and it took me about 3 times to figure out that my boss was calling him, telling him, right, hey, man, I got this guy, I don't think he's legal.
But,
so I met this lady. Nice, born in Nova Scotia, real... And hung out with her in Little Italy in Vancouver for a couple of months. And we decided, we talked to some friends that told us about this place called Supai.
Huh.
And that it was just the most almighty best place to go down there and do some psychedelics and handle blue-green water, you know.
Yeah.
So we left Vancouver probably November, December, and went to Supai and had this just friggin' incredible time there. Incredible.
So then we decided, let's talk about that a little bit. The main kind of visitation time in Supai is sort of spring and summer and fall, and in the winter it can be kind of quiet down there.
Yeah.
Did you drive out the hilltop and just start walking with your packs, or did you arrange to have some horse transport? How'd that work out?
No, we just decided, we just got there and hiked in.
Okay.
The first time I'd ever been there, and it was real quiet. There was hardly anybody there, and this is the year before 1980, so it had a reputation with, it was just starting to get known, at least in the circle of people that I ran with.
Okay.
And so I don't know how long we stayed down there. It was at least a week.
It must have been really nice coming down from cold, snowy Idaho.
I was coming down from rainy Vancouver, Seattle. I'd left there, Idaho, and like I say, I don't want to get into the reasons I left, but it was time, and it was an unbelievable place.
So did you spend like maybe a week there, or roughly?
I think at least a week there, and then we went up to Grand Canyon. First time ever in Grand Canyon, staying at Mather Campground there. And I remember it being cold there and all that, yada, yada. And I saw back in the day, they used to have all their job openings and stuff posted on bulletin boards and things,
Okay.
And there was no USA Jobs computer site.
Right.
And I saw a job announcement for trail crew members, and there was also one for trail foreman. So I applied for trail crew job. I put my application in, and then we went to Austin, Texas, and then it was time to really wrap up Idaho, figure out what I was doing with my animals. This is springtime, early spring. And after about a month of hadn't heard anything from the Grand Canyon, so I was actually thinking that, I'll go back to work for the McCall District one more year. And then I got a call from a guy by the name of Adrian Hatfield. And he was a Hatfield and a McCoy. He was all part of that deal. He wasn't the chief of maintenance. He was second in command, I guess, from a facility manager or some shit.
Okay.
And he called. When I got back to Idaho, my friend had told me that somebody from Grand Canyon called you. Here's the number. And I called him back, and he offered me the trail foreman job.
Oh.
I know. And so I was probably 30 at the time, 31, 48. 58, 68, 78, 30, 32. And he said, it's going to be a WS-9. And I don't know if you're familiar with the WG, WL, WS stuff.
I'm not.
Okay, WS is a wage supervisor. WL is a wage leader. And what I was in Idaho was a WG, and that's just a wage grade. It was It's the paying system for blue-collar types working for the park. We weren't GS. We weren't general services. And basically, it's the way they pay their maintenance guys.
Okay.
And it's a sliding scale depending on the cost of living in your area and the prevailing wage in your area of what your wage will be. So in other words, like up in Olympic, when the prevailing wage was tied to Seattle, it was really high. At Arizona, where it was tied to lower paying jobs, it was still a huge bump up from what I was making in Idaho, but it was also a huge bump in responsibilities.
All right.
And I took it. And I got up there. And
when did Adrian want you to start?
I started, I was trying to figure out exactly when I started. It was 1980, and it was definitely early. I'm saying springtime that I had to be back up there. And so I wrapped up the stuff in McCall. Sold my horses to a guy by the name of Dave Dewey. Took great care of them.
Nice.
Kissed my daughter. Told her, you know, gotta go. And headed to Grand Canyon.
Okay. You know, we've been going for about 47 minutes here, and because it just seems like a good place to maybe wrap this part up, and we can pick up again with what happened on your first day of work at Grand Canyon.
I agree. It's a good place to kind of tidy shit up.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, I didn't know this was all going to be on the internet, or I probably wouldn't have said fuck so often. but that's the way I talk.
Nobody worries. You know, the neat thing about this is who we are.
Right.
And we're all different, unique, and I just cherish this stuff. I don't know. When we try to be somebody else who we're not, well, we run into trouble.
So. I agree.
Cool. Well, with that, let's wrap up this part 4 interview with Richard Hansen. Today is Sunday, October 18th, 2020. My name is Tom Martin. Richard, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.